The His Go Friday podcast is brought to you in part by Messenger Fellowship, living the kingdom, fulfilling the call, proclaiming the truth.
How's it going, everyone? This is yours truly, Cameron Fry, coming at you. It's Thursday, March 21st, Friday Eve, and all is quiet here at the Fry household, which is hard to imagine, hard to say, hard to admit, the way this year has gone. A lot has been happening behind the scenes. There will be a separate life update pod probably at the official first quarter poll. For now, I want to talk about a series that I've been working on the past 2-3 weeks or so, Seven Signs of a Toxic Workplace. And I'm going to, in the next 10 minutes, hit on these points and open up the content to your thoughts, because certainly I want this to be a conversation, not so much a one-way audio recording that I'm just putting out there. I know that a lot of these truths have anchor in Scripture, so that's why I made it a point, as you'll, you know, if you haven't seen already, the blog posts I put for each point, supporting Bible verses, so you know that there is a root in the Word of God, and these are not just coming from me. Although certainly my experiences of the last 15 years have come together to prompt this podcast, and this really is a 2-part series of 7 points over 2 parts. So, and you know, I was driving down to Mercy the other day, sometime in February, and it hit me how come November, December, we'll hit the 15-year mark as a full-time employee in corporate America following college graduation. I'm just like, it's crazy how time flies. So sort of the motivation, the context, the inspiration behind this post. But certainly it's been brewing for a while, this notable marketplace mileage marker, and things haven't changed really over the course of the last 5-10 years. Listen, I want to help you mature in your Christ, your love by Christ identity, but also your co-worker in Christ identity, 1 Corinthians 9:3. So yeah, that's why we've been producing content slowly but surely and steady over the last, I can't believe we're almost at the 9-year mark, 10-year mark of conception, but 9 years in terms of launch and production. I think we're somewhere close to 240 posts. So, you know, again, the evidence of time passing, it's humbling to say the least. So let's dive in. First point, teammates aren't treated as diverse in function and co-equal in value. This is a huge point. This was one of those posts where you start with the most prominent, because honestly, I have a hard time believing people are going to read every word I say. So I'm going to start with the most important, probably the most prominent point of all 7, so that they can get this. And I basically was thinking, let's increase the odds of them, of the average viewer. Maybe this is their first time seeing His Go Friday. They don't know what we're about. I want them to get this. Teammates are treated as diverse in function, co-equal in value. That's a sign of a toxic environment. And really, there's a difference between culture and environment. So let me just go ahead and say, because sometimes we use culture and environment interchangeably. They're not the same. I believe the environment is more physical attributes, setting, surrounding. The culture is more of the unseen. It's sort of, you could think of environment as a foundation to the culture that exists on top of it. That's just at least how I view it. I think that if you have a weak environment, it's kind of like weak infrastructure. It could have a ripple effect into the culture. And sometimes, you know, the environment is good, but the culture is not. It kind of, there's not always a perfect relationship or, you know, that one-to-one input-output type relationship. So I guess it is possible to have an environment that's healthier than the culture. And I guess you could even have a culture that levels up and rises up despite the adverse environment. I saw that in pockets in isolated fashion at TDOT. I'm not going to get so specific with my experiences because I want to be anonymous. I know that if you're a longtime listener, you know that I was at TDOT most of the last decade, was a youth pastor at the gate during that time. This decade has been different. Most of my experience has been at the foundation group where we helped set up nonprofits. And then only for the last 3-4 months have I been an employee at Mercy Multiplied Nancy Alcorn's ministry, a thriving nonprofit that's been around for 40 years here in Nashville, Tennessee. So I don't want to get so specific. I want to stay vague. again, this is 15 years of experience. It could be the state. It could be as recent as what I've gotten and seen at Mercy in recent months. It's just a conglomeration of observations and want to convert them into practical applications that you can apply in your walk with the Lord. So sorry, I should have mentioned that first, but back to my point, diversity, inclusivity, equality discussions, part of HR initiatives. We get that. I just went through that in November at Mercy. But let's be honest with each other. How committed are most employers to consistently upholding these principles, these virtues? In a lot of environments, and you know what? I interviewed a lot of places last year, so I saw this in real time, and I'm kind of glad I did because it, you know, reminded me how a lot of organizations still have a vertical view when it comes to hierarchy. And really, we should have a more horizontal matrix approach. Otherwise, we're not going to really fully grasp what it means to treat people as diverse and functioning, co-equal in value. Understandably, you know, we're a capitalistic culture. You could argue about the direction of capitalism in this country, but certainly we crave performance-based metrics and originality and creativity and finding new ways, pioneering new channels, all that. I feel like it's a fever pitch. We've seen that at a fever pitch this century. But the bottom line to this point is essentially outcome divided by constancy. In the long run, no organization can reach its full potential without each member understanding and operating within their value. So as leadership, whether you're in it, around it, know people, and a lot of people, maybe they're not in a leadership committee right now in this season, but they are, you know, they have a well-established connection with someone in leadership. They have to understand this truth. Otherwise, you're talking about a fractured pillar. Ultimately, it's a house that cannot stand if you do not apply this. And I've seen it a few places where I've been. So some leave it to the individual to derive their own sense of purpose, which can be healthy. It can be fair. It depends on the context. Sometimes we want the hand-holding, and sometimes a good leader will know it's better to hold off on that and let someone not be so dependent. But for the most, I think more often than not, whether you're a supervisor, leader, the tendency is to be too distant. It's to be too detached, where we underserve in terms of direct encouragement, constructive feedback, et cetera, as I'll get to in a second. There's a lot of different ways we can appreciate people as diverse and functioning, co-equal in value. As a practical example, if your work leadership encourages favoritism, elitism limits opportunities to a select few, or just limits praise to a select few, odds are team-wide morale is not going to exist, or at least decrease from whatever place it was before. Internal tensions increase, bubble to the surface. People think they don't matter. If people are starting to view themselves as ants or just a number, you got a problem on your hands, because chances are it's not, you know, they're real close to wanting to explore their options, kind of like free agents on the market, you know, seeing kind of what they're worth, but it's really what else is out there. And are you going to, you know, and what makes this conversation somewhat difficult, but somewhat unique, is that it's hard to, in fact, I'll go and say, you can't detach leadership from talking about the culture and the environment. They are intertwined. You can't compartmentalize in full. To talk about a cultural problem, you have to talk about a leadership problem as well that allowed that cultural problem to exist in the first place. So the significance of the reality I submit is due to this reality, diverse and functional co-equal value. It's tied to our deepest core corporate identity. There's individual identity, you know, we're loved by God, but there's a corporate piece that ties into the body. As 1 Corinthians 12 talks about, from an original design perspective, how God made you and me, we have been since the beginning of time intended to serve as one body, applied to the marketplace. This means we steward structures that provide equal opportunity for growth in every position. Now, understandably, some positions, you know, get paid differently. The responsibilities are different. You know, low pressure, high pressure. You know, there's different responsibilities. So I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not trying to apply a socialistic grid to this. But I am saying equal opportunity for growth in every position. That is huge. We got to figure out a way to help take someone from where they're at to the next level. What, like, to help define the next level for them and help educate. It may be, you know, people want a different rate. Some people don't want to learn. you know, and you got to take consider that into consideration. But I think for most people, especially young generation, they want growth is important to them. They want to have something to aspire to. They want a next level to reach. So why not, you know, and you saw this at, you see this in state government, you get boxed in with a certain position and it's just like that you expect to come and it's just the same old thing over and over again. Unless you somehow reach a very high level position as part of a leadership team, you know, at the director level per se, and then the opportunities abound. It's like, there really should be a different type of curve or graph to this conversation. You really have to, you know, unless you have the right credentials, your opportunities, it's like the rich get richer. It's like the 1%. And that's just not right. I don't feel like that's even moral. I think part of this point, and we can be more specific later, but we got to be able to find a way to understand the reality of the present, but also help in our dealings, especially if we have subordinates, we have people on our team. What is the next level for them to reach? You could establish that during one-on-ones and performance evaluations and reviews at the end of the year. This needs to be talked about. That's a practical way of helping solve the problem. And if you're in a high-level position, consider the Jethro principles and seek to execute them effectively. I think middle managers play a crucial role in this point, as they could help foster accountability to those under their care. But they also report to the higher-ups, and usually, sometimes they have a subordinate relationship with the CEO, the founder, the president. So they could advocate both ways, and I'm in that situation now, so I feel that. If you're young and starting out, find a leader, a seasoned vet with mentorship potential. Watch how they respond to feedback and instruction. Don't be afraid to knock on someone's door, not just once or twice. We want to be so independent. It's hard to imagine us. Like, we don't naturally want to be under someone's wings. I feel like it's more of an old school notion, but I think it's important to actually want that starting out. At least have real life people goals. Like, I want to be like this person. You see a virtue in someone, you see a strength in someone. It's like, oh, I want to be able to be like that, operate like that, but in my own way. So there's a lot of different angles and facets. I feel like I'm barely scratching the surface here, but we got to move on for sake of time. Passive aggressive and manipulative leadership. I've seen this several times in my pit stops. Another side effect, toxic leadership, the deliberate withholding of constructive criticism, encouragement, and gratitude. It's not necessarily the direct negative that people say, although I've had some rude awakenings that were just, the execution was so bad, it just became a tough filter to overcome. I've had leaders who severely lacked grace, wisdom, understanding, and it was hard to, you know, you had to respond in the opposite spirit and be humble, come to work each day with your lunch pail, with a side of meekness. And sometimes you had a stiff upper lip, and just all you could do was pray for the other person. And certainly once that season, you know, those seasons would pass, you felt a weight lifted. I think if you're listening to this, you probably can relate to some of that. But to this point, in a post-pandemic world, there's a lot of passive-aggressive supervisors, whether intentional or unintentional. They fall into one of these camps where they withhold something good. And I'm calling that out. It's not, you can't just, you know, praise someone once or twice a year and then it's just, why aren't you doing this? Updates, you know, just requests. It has to be more part of the day-to-day, I think, and making sure that you are elevating performance, but also uplifting that and being curious. Even if you're in leadership, be curious if someone is lacking or is just kind of plateauing. Don't just be like, okay, well, as long as I get this done, I think we should always try to help each other, not just get the work done, but aspire to those next levels we talked about in point number one. But silence as a communication tool, support withdrawal as a primary communication vehicle, those should never exist. If you're exhibiting them, sorry, shame on you. That can't be tolerated. So, and a lot of times that's going to go unnoticed. So you have to have that self-awareness and that conviction to go the other way, especially when like you're intentionally loving on someone and giving attention and you're feeding someone whether it's feedback, even it's just like just with a dose of commentary and inquiring about life and just caring about the, you know, what's going on behind the scenes, because a lot of times what happens, you know, family and personal life, like work life, they're all intertwined, right? I've seen people who just never were asked those questions. Hey, how's the wife doing? How's, you know, the husband doing? How's the kids doing? Doesn't have to be super involved, but just I've seen intentional withholdings from even just from people who needed to know that they cared, especially people who were going through tough times. And sometimes you just want the simple and the smooth story, like, you know, you jive well with someone, and so you just kind of focus more on who you jive well. Again, the rich get richer, whereas the poor, maybe the poor person in this context is someone who just, it's not as much of a natural fit as it is an adaptive fit. And I'm thinking of Enneagram and personality profile mixing and matching. You can't have chemistry with everyone. But I think as a leader, you have to just not succumb to just pouring it more to those you have chemistry with. I think it's okay to that more chemistry exists with certain people. But I think as a leader, you have to put that in the back burner and let that be subdued so that everyone is fed equally. When it comes to the work and even just what connects to that, we have to be mindful as leaders how we're, like, the message we're conveying to other people. Because sometimes it's, we may say everything right, everything is right on paper, but in between the lines, even in the silence, like, how are we actually communicating with our body language to our time, to the frequency of which we say things? All right, a mature leader not only knows when and how to deliver feedback, but facilitates psychological safety, trust, and confidence in challenging situations. You could learn a lot about your superior in moments when things get tough, right? And if you're in an environment where leaders have ambushing agendas, redelegate tasks without proper communication, or use silence to communicate, then newsflash, you deserve better. And leaders really who drive wedges in or use ego to stir division aren't true leaders. So you might want to explore other options. I'm not suggesting you abandon ship right away. You may need to just, stiff upper lip, plug your nose and keep going and just hope that things get better and pray things get better. But if you're working under a similar authority and it doesn't change over time, then yes, you need to look for something else. And I'm encouraging you, as you do that, you could still take inventory of offenses, collect your emotions, find a time to speak with the appropriate authority. All right, moving right along. Point number three, lack of trust, communication, engagement. This is per point number two, if a leader lacks trust, even with a subordinate, it's best to confront the issue fostering the deficit or dissonance. Generally, an employee who feels they aren't trusted wants to discern areas of improvement. I've been in leadership roles and I've found that sometimes we tend to underestimate what people can pick up and how they could read things apart from just the words we directly speak to them. So, if there's a lot of different ways you can communicate to someone that they aren't getting the job done or they're not providing satisfactory results, it's better to be head on and direct and not reactive about it. Better not to be passive about it. Any employee I've supervised, they want to improve. Thankfully, I haven't had one who, didn't want to get better in some way. So indifference or the perception thereof, if we're exuding that, it could be pretty deflating. And we're only extending toxic environment. I don't know anyone who would actually want to stay in a toxic environment. I mean, I guess there's some people who are kind of like that meme dog in the burning house. Everything's fine. People don't want to have to deal with things. They just rather, status quo. It's their truth within the status quo. They're only going to care if they're potentially negatively impacted by it. But in your own experiences, I don't know what hats you've worn, but just know that a lack of communication sometimes could be the sign of a lack of trust, and it'll almost always create some form of angst, strife, chaos. It never leads into anywhere good or productive. So sound leaders are going to be keen to promote the well-being of their teammates, of their subordinates, and just remember, occasional check-in or positive acknowledgement can go a long way in reinforcing a worker's understanding of their value while also regulating their emotions. We could, we don't do things to regulate emotions. I mean, that we have to understand that that's the responsibility of the person, but we could certainly help. Regardless of our roles, let's diffuse discord through compassion, engagement, and curiosity. And that's a two-way street for anyone, in regards of position. So look at 1 Corinthians 15, 33 through 44, Titus 3, 10 for some support there. 4, no formal review process in our pathway for development. Again, I've been in public, private, and liturgical settings. I could speak very candidly to this point. I've seen this process mapped out a number of different ways. If your employer has no formal performance evaluation process, but the only criticism is given in moments of error, that's a major red flag in your hand. Again, all employees deserve to know if their work is effective and efficient. And that's one thing the state did really well. They almost overkilled it with the amount of reviews they did. Like every quarter of every year, you know, you could see kind of the progression of where you're going. And it really was eye-opening and helpful to know, you know, even just through smart metrics. Hey, I was down here. Why is my performance starting to sag a little bit? And wow, it actually skyrocketed here. What am I doing right? What's helping me to provide better results? So, you know, we've established already feedback and communication withholding is signs of environmental toxicity. And that actually can breed into the culture from man to man, person to person, the company. But the call here is straightforward. Develop and promote a review process where all team members top down are accountable and have a means to build areas of strength and weakness alike. If you are a subordinate, if you're the perceived low man on the totem pole, there's probably so much you can do apart from just making, like asking. If there isn't a formal process, you can certainly knock on the door and ask for one. And if there's a game plan for it to exist, I've been in work situations where there wasn't something right away, but eventually it was built over time. And in the middle of the experience of the tenure, suddenly there was one. And so it was great to be a part of the birthing process there. But there needs to be the hope of a review process if you don't have one right now. Otherwise, if there's no plan, that's just a recipe for disaster. Even if the meeting frequency with your reviews is quarterly or biannual, the impacts can be massive as you streamline a process to preserve morale and corporate performance. Supporting Bible verses there, James 1:19, Proverbs 15:1, Colossians 4:6. You know there's a lot of Proverbs in Paul's letters in here. All right, we're over the halfway mark. If you've stayed with me so far, congratulations. Give yourself a round of applause, a pat on the back. I appreciate you guys hanging in with me here. So number 5, inconsistent leadership. When we talk about toxic managers, leaders, there are several negative characteristics we could cite. Narcissism, manipulation, arrogance, among others. But there's one encompassing a multitude. And to me, that's an environment where leaders act contrarily to their words. Their actions and words contrast each other. Ask any leader, tenured employee with authority, and they'll admit responsibility and accountability are essential to positive team performance and morale. Yet where there's inconsistencies, there's that word again, between expectation and execution, there is room for misinterpretation, miscommunication, even tolerance, and negative emulation down the organizational tree. What you do, whatever good thing you do should be reproducible. Unfortunately, the corollary to that is sometimes the bad things we do can be reproducible if the person who is following in our footsteps doesn't know that, hey, what we're doing is not right. It may not be so much a matter of morality, but efficiency, but we have to be mindful that our actions speak louder than words, and our actions sometimes can be, you know, and for those who may simply want to get the job done, maybe there's a little bit of survival mixed into their mentality. They just want to show up, you know, what makes sense to them. They just want to do it, and if, you know, it's monkey see, monkey do, they're going to probably, however they're trained early on, is what they're going to stick with. Whatever their initial way of programming is like mentally gets locked in there, and it's hard to change. So we have to be mindful of those who might be younger than us or are new to the team, and they just want to, they want to follow in someone's footsteps a lot of times. So are they following good steps? Are we setting good footsteps for them to follow? And it's a good question to ask yourself if you're in leadership. The good news is, with this point, the fix doesn't have to be so complicated. If you're a team lead, supervisor, director, just walk the talk. Walk the talk. If you say you're not a micromanager, don't micromanage, even if your intent is to the contrary. I've had a few supervisors over the years who were so adamant that they weren't micromanagers. Like, they were trying to sell me on it. They were trying to pitch the idea, like, yeah, this is not me. Like, they were trying to even convince themselves, persuade themselves that they weren't. And I'm just like, I'm a little nervous because I feel like you probably are this based on the amount of plug and attention you're giving to it. Maybe it's been cited before. And it's just like, no, I refuse to believe that. That's not who I am. Yeah, I may not be. Who wants to be a micromanager? Well, I better be careful there. For most people, who wants to be known as one? Because micromanager doesn't have a positive spin to it. It's kind of a dent in the self-image department. So most people don't want to micromanage, but it doesn't matter about the intent so much as what is actually coming across. If you want to probe past normality with your curiosity, then yeah, put that intent under a microscope, assess it, take inventory of it, be willing to receive feedback from your team if your actions, maybe they communicate distrust or produce uncomfortable vibes. It's okay to want to know why. Like, I've had supervisors and leaders, they wanted to know what was going on, and I was like, it kind of fringes on the personal, but if they really are caring, I want to give them the benefit of the doubt, right? So I will reward their what I perceive as compassionate and caring and curiosity, all those C's, with kind of a simplified premise of what is going on. If the matter is specifically personal, if there is any concern about what's happening behind the scenes interfering with my work, I'm going to give them a straightforward, honest answer without saying something unnecessary that might probe more unnecessary questions. Like, there's a fine line sometimes in how and what we communicate to what level. But just remember, if you're the leader, seeking clarity is one thing, but second-guessing motives without that compassion and grace and understanding is another. So check your intentions at the door. Abide carefully and make sure your execution aligns the intent, assuming it's good to go. If you struggle to model any of these qualities for the life of those around you, just find a way to mature find a way to get even some professional development for yourself, where, especially in areas where intention and action aren't aligned. I think we need to be mindful that regardless of who we are, where we are on the conveyor belt within our organization, but where we are in the body. But if there's intention action misaligned, we got to find a way to bridge that gap, seek help from other people who might be able to help us with that. No one should want to be inconsistent in their work. Hence why leaders especially should understand consistency isn't just a function of fruit of one's hand, but also the words of their mouth, reflection of their heart. I'm thinking of Psalm 19 when I say that. Plenty of support in the Gospels, Matthew 7:23, Luke 16. Some more, 1 Corinthians 15:58, Galatians 6:9, 1 John 4:20. All right, two more points. Number 6, over-tolerance, permissiveness. To be fair, this flows from the prior point, but different arenas, this warrants a separate explanation, based on the abuse I've seen. If you say a certain action won't be tolerated, or you hear that, don't make the foundational principles conditional. Just if you hear something or a leader say that this won't be tolerated, it needs to be true for everyone. Instead of making exceptions or excuses based on seat or situation, be true to how moral failures are handled. While cutting ties with some individuals may be cleaner, this doesn't have to involve a bending of boundaries. Boy, this is a tough topic depending on where you've been. And some of this, by the way, is not just my experience, but my wife's experience. I won't get too specific again, but the ripple effect, the top-down ripple effect to study rationale and decision-making can be empowering in the long term. That is an important part to this point. Even if it's messy in the short term, if you stay true to your guns, you don't give an inch to someone just because they might be higher up, you got to think of the big picture, and you got to think of the fact that there's, in most organizations, there is, the conflict may deal with just two people tops, maybe three, but you probably, 10, 15, 20 times the amount of people who are watching how that situation unfolds, assuming they know about it. But if trust bends or breaks, abiding by proper protocol should be a safety blanket. It's like, your break glass is needed. That protocol will not only enhance security, but also encourage people to adhere to higher standards of integrity. Isn't that what we want? Like, we should want, whether we're No matter what our seat is, whatever our role is, we should want people next to us, the people at the top who are making critical decisions. We should all want integrity to be on the same page there, to be in unison in that integrity. So, if you're a leader, don't sacrifice reproach by synonymizing forgiveness and tolerance. If an employee has an established track record of poor conduct, scale the offense and timely oversee the appropriate actions in a way that benefits the whole of the team. Keep the big picture in mind. And when in doubt, just say no to permissiveness and yes to ethical follow-through. I mean, we have to be willing to have the same wording in our conversations with people, even if we're having to rebuke those who we're closer to. We have to be mindful, like almost think of those moments as scripted, that, you know, what if the scripting gets out? What if the words that we're saying gets out? Would we want people to notice those discrepancies? Are we being sneaky? Are we trying to hide some of those shortcuts we take in certain conversations, depending on who we're dealing with? So be careful with overtolerance or permissiveness, especially if you're a leader. Finally, lack of awareness and accountability. This is also a big one. I think you probably look at the first and the last points as bookends to this conversation. Clearly, no work is perfect. Employees, leaders, teams may display negative traits from time to time. However, if that behavior is pervasive, then leadership must consider how the culture they've cultivated may be impacting the trend. If you can do that, if you're part of a leadership or connected to leadership where they're cultivating or taking inventory of what they're cultivating, if they're not just assuming all is well and not being so reactive to it, that's a great sign. Unless a single employee is the root of the hostility, a leader best serves a company by investigating beyond the conflict into source regions. There's that curiosity again. Someone's struggling. Why are they struggling? And I know it's maybe not second. Maybe it's second nature. Maybe it's not. But what is it we're doing that might be a stumbling block or a setback or, you know, part of the stumbling block for this person that's in trouble? Often, if an employee starts demonstrating deregulation, starts, you know, opposing, just doing things out of normal, out of character, rather, there's a corporate tie-in. It could be a lack of recognition or development, unclear communication, favoritism, elitism. They just feel on the out looking in, like they are not being trusted or given a chance to advance in some capacity. The options are many. The possibilities are many, but, you know, even in the situations, even if the current's underlining, you got to consider the fact that larger problems may exist. They may be domestic, they may be personal, but it's like we can't just look at the situation or the conflict and make a judgment off the tip of the iceberg, knowing that we're seeing that tip of the iceberg through a very fine lens, a limited lens, like a pinhole. So, certainly we want to take it seriously when there's a boundary being breached, when authority is not being honored, when it's disorderly conduct. There should be a no-tolerance aspect to that. But I think part of being accountable and being aware is, what is there something about the environment or the culture that is kind of fanning the flames here? Am I doing anything that isn't helping? Am I playing a part in this being a more adverse situation? It's like a chance to reflect and be like, am I part of the problem or am I going to be part of the solution? Don't miss an opportunity there, because you could really win some respect. And as you come to the middle of the table with your chips, you could just be like, all right, I want to help you. And if someone could feel like that genuineness, that authenticity of wanting to be helped from the other side, even if they are in trouble, that can go a long way. So we got to gauge transparency through absolute principles that the organization is founded on, and really absolute principles that we abide our life, regardless of who we are, what we believe in. There needs to be something strong and sturdy that we're abiding off of in order to help in these situations when there's conflict resolution in our midst. And those principles, they need to be reemphasized during times of rebuke, reproach, assessing repercussions, doing damage control. Handled the right way, a potentially volatile situation can de-escalate into a refreshing reset when humility meets resolution. Conversely, if a leadership committee lacks awareness and accountability, the employee will almost always follow suit. For instance, you may have a teammate or subordinate who acts out of ignorance at times, yet perhaps he or she feels ignored, like a number within a company that hoards autonomy, withholds clarity. Maybe they feel like a number, like they have no meaning, no purpose to really bring or contribute. They don't feel connected to anyone, and they're on the fence. How would we have a conversation with someone on the fence? I think that a good leader knows how to, like, anticipates having those conversations, or knows, like, how they would handle a situation like that with an employee on the fence, instead of just letting them go. Oh man, they're on the fence. Well, I'm not going to try and persuade them. They're just going to go off anyway. I know what it seems to me, anytime I've been on the fence, no one really came after me, and I shouldn't look like, we talk about leadership being passive. We can't be passive either. If we're in a non-leadership role, we can't just be like, you know, we can't withhold or withdraw ourselves and expect people to just be like, hey, what's up with them? They may think it, but they're probably not going to follow through the depths we want them to. So it's just better to be honest and to have well-oiled communication. Or, you know, and again, if you're not in a leadership role, at least be strong and courageous to demonstrate that vertically. Don't hate your boss or supervisor for where they're at. Know that you could actually inspire them just as much as they could inspire you. It's, again, two-way street. If leaders and teams aren't committed to putting the shoe on the other foot in times of conflict and conflict resolution, toxicity will ensue. It will result one way or another. So dare to deal with these situations delicately and rightfully, with a heart to be, you know, to understand and be kind to one another, but also find the right way to employ justice, upholding integrity. You never want your clients and supporters to sense dysfunction. I've been in situations like that where the in-house was just deteriorating. It was fading away. It was a house that could not stand. The pillars were fractured. And eventually, you know, if this last point isn't done well, if there's no awareness and accountability top down, especially within the leadership committee, it's going to erode the culture and then erode the environment. Either the culture environment or the environment and culture. So, all right. Well, I know this was a long one, but those are my 7 signs of a toxic, it's not so much leadership, but a toxic work culture. Hopefully you got something out of this. You learned something new. If not, I know that your experience is valuable. Your heart, what you bring to the table each and every day, it's something that is appreciated by many. So know that, you know, your, what you've learned in your respective work journeys, you're encouraged to share that with us. If you have any prayer requests or needs, there's different ways you could connect with us. Email, text, DM, our social media platforms. We encourage you to find a way to, you know, chat and converse with us so that we can better understand how we could support you where you're at. Even a comment, you know, it reveals something about what the Lord has led you through, how he's teaching you in this season, and we want you to feel empowered to share that with us as well. So, all right. Love you all. Peace.